Maharaj, there is a question from Anidita Didi from Calcutta, India. She's asking, in Krishna consciousness we have bhava samadhi. Is that not samadhi? The nirvikalpa samadhi connects one to Brahman, but is the adhiruddha mahabhava also a type of samadhi?
We know that in the beginning, the Bhagavad Gita, the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna asks Krishna, what are the symptoms of someone who's in samadhi? Okay. So what do we mean by that? That's a term that it occupies some place in the popular imagination that someone who's, shall we say, you know, in a never-ending state of spiritual enlightenment, I mean, in the most general definition. But there, Arjuna, I mean, it's interesting because he says, how does he speak? How does he walk? He just doesn't say, describe someone in samadhi. Mariani said, how does he speak? How does he walk, talk? And one of the interesting aspects of Bhagavad Gita, and perhaps what for many seems to leave it open to interpretation, is the general meaning of words and then very specific meaning. Just as Srila Guru Maharaj said once, with a formula, like a sutra, like formula, as connotation increases, denotation decreases. Which is a way of saying, the more you define something, then the more narrow or more specific, because what is specified may be the most broad and accommodating thing, so narrow could be misleading. Say, the more you define something, the more clearly indicated and specific will be what is indicated by that. So, just as he said, Bhagavad Gita, we're talking about Bhagavad Gita and the definition of samadhi, or a description of someone in samadhi. But we say, who accepts Bhagavad Gita? Fine, most everyone accepts Bhagavad Gita. Not only in India, all the different sampradayas and traditions within India, but outside of India, European thinkers, American transcendentalists, Thoreau, Whitman, Emerson, the German thing, so many, they accept Bhagavad Gita. And openly, they say so. Years ago, for promotional purposes, they made a poster of all the different Western thinkers who praise Bhagavad Gita. And one that stands out was Thoreau, Henry David Thoreau of Walden fame, and where he said, remember, he decided to go into the forest and live alone for a couple of years without seeing anyone, and growing his own garden, like simplifying life as much as possible. And he wrote a book about that called On Walden Pond, like what he learned from doing that. But one of the things he said was, beautiful quote, he said, in the morning, just as when you get up in the morning, you bathe and cleanse yourself, he said, in the morning, I bathe my intellect in the stupendous and cosmogonal glory of the Bhagavad Gita, in comparison with which our modern literature seems puny or trivial, small. So the acceptance of Bhagavad Gita is so broad. So again, the definition as given of samadhi can be considered very broad. Generally, we're taking someone who's completely withdrawn from any, from the objective world, and internally occupied. One of the things Krishna said, when he said, yada sangharate chayam kurmungani ga sarvasam. He said, like the way a tortoise withdraws its limbs, the senses have been withdrawn from all, you know, engagement with the objective world. But what about the subjective world? Does it mean so just some sort of neutral position without any inner subjective engagement? We'll go back to Guru Maharaj saying, as connotation increases, denotation decreases. If we say that the Bhagavad Gita should be understood in terms of Srimad Bhagavatam, Muktir hitvanyata rupam swaropena vibhastiti, that mukti, liberation, doesn't mean mere withdrawal from the negative plane, but engagement, positive service in the positive plane. So if we start increasing the connotation of what is meant by these words spoken by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, and move away from a general interpretation. Someone who's, you know, exclusively absorbed in Atma. Well, what is Atma? An Atma cannot be conceived properly without Paramatma and the Paramatma realm. Right? Moving from Brahma to Paramatma to Bhagavan. So when we introduce Bhagavat as the means of interpreting Bhagavad Gita, you're left with the Vaishnavas, Sri Vaishnavas of the Ramanuja school, the Tattvavadis of Madhva, the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. The Vaishnavas will all say, yes, Bhagavad Gita should be interpreted in terms of Srimad Bhagavatam. Others may not agree with that, unless they also want to spin the Bhagavatam in some nirakar, impersonal direction. But so by increasing the connotation, saying Bhagavad Gita should be read in the light of Srimad Bhagavatam, all the Vaishnavas will agree. But then when we say, and the Bhagavatam should be understood, that, you know, Gaudiya Darshan, what is given by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the Goswamis of Vrindavan and the Rupa Nuga line, etc. Then the Sri Vaishnavas and the Tattvavadis are eliminated, and we have the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. So when she poses this question, saying Nirvikalpa Samadhi, it's like we're told, back to general definitions, what are the activities of the mind? Sankalpa Vikalpa. Considering something, dismissing something, accepting it, rejecting it. Sankalpa vikalpa. Nirvikalpa means no other consideration other than what is exclusively spiritual. Right? Again, withdrawing from that plane. But on what basis? If we look carefully in those slokas where Krishna's defining this, a series of slokas, one of the words he uses interestingly is prasad, which we take to be mercy, which is to imply this is not merely something, you know, one decides to do. Like, I've got a strategy how to achieve samadhi. Like during the 60s, that when people were experimenting with psychedelics, this one person, he invented the so-called samadhi tank. And the idea would go, you know, take massive amounts of psychedelics. The samadhi tank was like at room temperature water. And then go in there and without any, external sense distraction, you know, you'd be in this womb-like state. And his idea was trying to, achieve samadhi, or what at least what he conceived it to be. But another Western work comes to mind, The Heart of Darkness by Joseph Conrad, or when he's supposed to have a look into the primal condition of man, and when the he's asked by another, like, and what did you see in that native primitive state? His famous expression is, the horror, the horror. He didn't see something that was pretty, right, in the so-called primal condition of man. So it means something more than that. They would say, pratyaksha, direct sense experience, paroksha, collective sense experience, aparoksha, cleansed of all experience, not influenced by any sense experience whatsoever. So for some people, that is their idea of samadhi, right? Just like a tabula rasa, cleansed of all negative impressions, but absence of any positive impressions, sort of eternal limbo in the negative state. Right. Excuse me, in the neutral state. And inasmuch as life in the negative world is endlessly suffering, or as people have pointed out, they say, life is full of suffering and then you die. So inasmuch as that, it can be seen as a great relief. A great relief, if the end result of sense engagement after momentary, flickering moments of relative happiness end in abject suffering, then to withdraw from that plane entirely gives one a great sense of relief. And if someone equates relief with happiness, well, that's their case. But just to get, you have a thorn and you're saying, you pull the relief, that sort of relief. It's not happiness proper, substantially. It's just the absence of suffering. That we would not call happiness proper, anandam. Still, if we want to be generous and say, well, what about those who they actually not only withdraw from the negative plane, but they become Brahman-realized. They realize the Brahman aspect of the infinite, which Vaishnavas acknowledge is one aspect. Even in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, it says, Vedanti tatvavidas tatvam yajganam advayam. Advaya gyan means there's only one thing to be understood, but in three phases, Brahma, Paramatma, Bhagavan. So what of those who realize Brahman? That's sometimes called Brahmananda, spiritual happiness, spiritual pleasure, so great that even the most enticing mundane pleasure is of no interest to them. Meaning, The erotic pleasure of the mundane world, which generally tend to be the most intense form of material pleasure, is of no interest to these Brahman realized souls. Ramante yogino anante sachidanand chidatmani. Srila Rupa Goswami, when he's defining pure devotion, and what about bhakti rasa and the happiness from love and devotional activity? He gives quotes a nice verse there, a couple. One of it is, he said, so that spiritual happiness, Brahmananda, he says, Brahmanando bhavedesha chet paradha gunikrita naiti bhakti sukham bodhe paramanu tulamapi. He's saying, if you take the happiness of Brahmananda, which we say is millions of times greater than mundane erotic pleasure. So he's saying, keep that in mind. This is a type of spiritual math. So keep that in mind. He's saying, if you take that pleasure of Brahmananda and multiply it a trillion times, it's not equal to an atomic fraction of the pleasure derived from Krishna Bhakti Rasa. That's the statement of Rupa Goswami. Another place, what did he say? Tvat shakshat karanalada vishudabdi stitasyame gosh sukhani gosh padayante paramanu tulamapi. Here, gosh pada, he's comparing it to the Brahmana, to the water left in the hoof print of a calf, compared to an ocean of bhakti rasa. He's giving these extreme examples. Were it not Rupa Goswami, we might dismiss it as hyperbole. But Rupa Goswami is in a position to give this sort of insight. So he's not just saying, in other words, if we concede there's some comparative analysis of nirvikalpa samadhi and bhava samadhi or adirudha bhav mahabhav. Yes, here's the sort of metric by which we're going to measure that on the authority of Rupa Goswami, saying, yes, this pleasure, yeah, there's some pleasure there. What is it on a comparison? Multiply it a trillion times, it's not equal to an atomic fraction of this. And we might even say he's being generous. So this sort of extreme position. So in the pure devotion preaching of Kapila Dev to Devahuti, which Rupa Goswami quotes intermittently also, he's saying like, and Rupa Goswami makes reference to this in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, where he's saying, so in this ocean of ecstatic joy, the devotee, they're like, he said, you know, like aquatic, swimming deep in this ocean. Not that they're just in the ocean swimming in it. They're like these deep aquatic, who are going deeper and deeper in like infinite oceanic depths of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And he's saying, whereas, what are these other things compared to? They're like little river tributaries of liberation. You know, if fortunate, they make it to this sea, to the shore of this ocean, and into that ocean. That's why the book is called the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Right? And what does Mahaprabhu tell him? It's based upon Mahaprabhu's teachings to Rupa Goswami. He's saying, the length and breadth of this ocean are infinite. Again, this is just, we have to think, who is this coming from? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In shorthand, Radha Govinda Milivatanu, Radha and Krishna combined. This opinion is being expressed. This reality is being expressed. And what does Mahaprabhu say? It's an infinite ocean. The infinite. as Guru Maharaj reminds us, who sleeps on a bed of infinite, he's telling us that the length and breadth of this ocean is infinite. But, and so it would be impossible to describe, but, so I'll take one drop from this infinite ocean of Bhakti Rasa and describe that to you. So, in that Bhagavad Gita section, another interesting verse that's there, because it appears on one level to be saying one of the prerequisites for achieving this stage is complete withdrawal from sense activity, or at least what we will say mundane sense activity. So there's the verse, the Vishaya vinivartante nirahara shadehina raso varjam raso pyasya param drishtva nivartate, that raso varjam raso pyasya. The word rasa is being used. So he's indicating bhakti rasa. When one has the experience of this, a taste of this, that has as its consequence or side effect the subduing of the senses, withdrawing from the objective plane of sense experience. So we go from pratyaksha, paroksha, aparoksha, then adhoksaja. And how it, this is where mercy comes into the picture. The adhoksaja realm descends into this world out of its own necessity. Right. So, these references later in Bhagavad Gita, in the sixth chapter, it's also another samadhi sloka. Krishna says to Arjuna, yam ladva chapram labham manyate nadikam tataha. When you have achieved this stage, you'll think you've got everything. There, in other words, again, no other consideration. This is it. This is the ultimate thing. You've got that. This is sometimes the Gita is called Gita Upanishad because it's consistent, really, the connecting thread of what is presented in the Upanishads is found in Bhagavad Gita. Guru Maharaj like to quote the Upanishadic saying, you know, yasmin vigyate sarvam eva vigyatam bhavati. Inquire about that one thing, upon knowing, everything is known. Acquire that one thing upon achieving, everything is got. Right. So, but what is that one thing? Brahma, Paramatma, Bhagavan. Paramatma, the target of the yogis. Brahma, Paramatma means jnanis, yogis. But the bhaktas, Bhagawan, and Bhagawan proper means Shakti and Shaktiman, the Lord in the company of his potency or his consort. So, interestingly, we could say addressing this issue is Sukadeva Goswami, the speaker of the Bhagavatam, who his legendary liberated soul, but as a Brahmavadi, up to his speaking of the Bhagavatam. He, according to Srila Guru Maharaj, is accepted as the loudspeaker of the Bhagavatam because of this qualification. All of these sages assembled from all over the universe, they will listen to him because of these legendary qualifications, liberated in the womb of his mother. He's already in nonstop samadhi, Sukadev. That Sukadev, he becomes the mouthpiece, the loudspeaker for Srimad Bhagavatam. And by way of introduction, it's mentioned, we've told them, that when he got some inspiration to leave the ashram of Vedavyas, which is on the banks of the Saraswati River, that current is flowing there with the jujube, the fruit, the ultimate fruit-bearing tree, Nigama Kalpatarur Galidampalam. He goes running off, and Vedavyas running after him, searching. And we're told that he goes by a pond where Dibya Devis are bathing naked. But making eye contact with him, seeing him, they don't even bother to cover themselves. He just goes on. Then Vedavyas comes, and they're covering themselves, and he's looking for his son. But he's noticing, when my son went by, you didn't bother covering yourselves. Now I'm here, you're covering yourself. Why? And they say, because in him there is no trace of male gaze. There's not even a trace amount of exploiting tendency in his eyes. So there's no need to cover our modesty. This seemingly, you know, and this anecdote, this incident, is given to certify, it's a necessary certification for the qualification of Sukadeva Goswami. This means he's already in that plane above mundane sense experience. He has no interest in male-female eroticism. It doesn't touch him. Right? And that Sukadeva Goswami, when he begins to address the assembly in on the banks of the Jamuna in Sukhothal, in answer to Parikshit Maharaj's question, what is the duty of one in life, specifically for one who is about to die? He can understand. On a certain level, he's known to everyone. They've offered him the presidential seat. Even his guru and param guru are sitting in the audience, namely Vyasadev and Narada. So he says, Parinishtitopi Nairgunye Uttama Sloka Lilaya Grihita Cheta Rajarse Akyanam Yadaditavan. So he mentions Nirguna. Said, I was already situated in the Nirguna plane. That means Trigunatita, the three modes of nature, Tama, Raja, Sattva. Trigunatita means beyond that, Nirgun. But not that that Nirguna world has no qualities. It has no mundane qualities. So when it says, when Krishna's saying, his senses are withdrawn from all mundane sense experience, it doesn't mean that there is no sense activity. So Sukadeva says, Uttama Shloka Lilaya, and in that position, and here we can say, describe it as neutral, above the negative plane, below the positive plane. In that position, I heard about the super sensual pastimes of Radha and Krishna and the Braja Gopis. And my heart and soul were carried away to another plane that I didn't know existed previously. So these, as Sanyal gave that phrase, the erotic principle and unalloyed devotion, these super sensual pastimes of Radha and Krishna and the Braja Gopis captured him totally. The person who had no interest in mundane eroticism, So it indicates that this is not erotic in any mundane sense, but that such a possibility exists in the upper and the spiritual world, in the supersensual spiritual world. So when Krishna says, raso varjam raso pyasya, it is not that in this position one has achieved, you know, ultimate tastelessness. They no longer have a taste for anything. Right? He's saying, actually, they've tasted a superior substance. And on account of awakening this superior taste, all these other things are tasteless. As expressed in the sloka of Jamuna Charja, Yadavadi mama cheta krishna padaravinde nava nava rasa damuninjanta rantumasit nari sangame, etc. He's saying, now that I'm tasting nava nava rasa, krishna bhakti rasa, if some momentary flash remembrance of mundane eroticism comes up, he's saying, I'm repulsed. Not only is it not seductive, he's repulsed by the whole. He finds it repugnant. So the reason I'm saying these things is to not, as we don't want to equate samadhi in the general sense of Brahmananda and then there's a Vaishnava version of that. No. On the basis of what is expressed by Rupa Goswami, millions and trillions of times greater. And that brings us to the subject of, you know, so-called Adhirudha Mahabhav of Srimati Radharani. It's a long leap from that. We hear Rupa Goswami gives the sequence. Ado Shraddha Tatasaru Sangad Bhajana Kriya Anartha Nivritti Nishta Ruchi Ashakti Bhav. And then Prem. Right, so on the way to Krishna Prem, saying first, what does it begin with? Shraddha and Sadhu Sangha. And then one could make a case, say, why Shraddha before Sadhu Sangha? Actually, it's by the grace of the Sadhus that you get Shraddha. And that's confirmed by Vishwanath Chakrabarti and others. And in the purports of Saraswati Thakur, there's a way that sometimes when things are understood so clearly, the sequencing of first and second is irrelevant. Because it's really by the grace of the sadhus that this awakening comes. Gyane priyasamurapasanamante eva jivanti san mukharitam bhavadiya bhartam stane stita srutigatam tanuvan manobhya. By hearing this awakening, Krishna bhakti, Krishna prema, Nitya Siddha, Sadhu Kavanoi, Shravanadi Shuddha Chite Koroye Udoi, this awakening. So from Shraddha to Sadhu Sangha, Bhajana Kriya, spiritual activities under their direction, Anartha Nivritti, unwanted, undesirable, and misconceived. Misconception is gradually converting into proper conception. The nishta, deeply rooted faith, ruchi, a taste for these things, a developing, growing taste that turns into a type of spiritual attachment, addiction, ashakti, and then bhav, genuine spiritual emotions, not imitative or sentimental, but genuine spiritual feelings, because ultimately, sat, chit, anandam, chit is the cognitive enabler of anandam, of happiness. Right? So, and then bhav means the bhakti lata beads is now grown as a creeper, and this is the flowering stage where it has some a unique fragrance that is attractive, that in a sense that devotee's devotion has a unique fragrance that Krishna finds appealing. Sri Krishna Karshini Chasa, as Rupa Goswami again defining, Kleshagni Subhada Moksha Lagutakrit Sandra Ananda Visheshatma Sudurlabhaim Sri Krishna Karshini Chasa. Now Krishna is attracted, then prem. Then Krishna prem. So on a very high stage. And after that, so further delineation, having achieved Krishna prem, sneho, man, pranay, rag, anurag, bhav, mahabhav. So this is the height, the highest stage of Krishna prem, that we're told only experience expressed by Radharani and her, you know, friends and assistants, we can say, and Mahaprabhu. The Charitamritam says, Mahabhav Swarupini Radha Thakurani. So, to call this samadhi with all the generic connotations of what samadhi has come to mean in time and in this world is almost an insult. You understand? There is total remembrance on their part, but not that they're sitting, as Guru Maharaj says in his Gayatri explanation, dimahi. Meditation doesn't mean abstract thinking or doing nothing. Dhi, it says, means buddhi, intelligence, using your intelligence in seva. Right. What does Chakrabarti Thakur say? One of the faults of Brahmavadis in general, and meaning as achieved by Gyanis, where's the glorification of Krishna? The Braja Gopis are addicted to glorifying Krishna. Kirtanam, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam. Where is the glorification of Krishna? So, oh, what I was going to say. So the four Kumaras, we could give them as an example of, you know, the epitome of being situated in samadhi. Two things come to mind. One is, in the Bhagavatam, where it says, Tasya Aravinda Nayanasya Padaravinda Kinjalka Mishra Tulasi Makaranda Vayu Antargata Swavivarena Chakaratesham Sanksho Bhyam Akshara Jusham Apicha Chittatanvo. So they're perfectly situated in samadhi, but they smell the aroma of the lotus feet of the Lord mixed with tulsi, and they're carried away to another domain. Then going in the other direction, they're perfectly situated in samadhi, right? Nothing should disturb them. Right? No mundane thing can break this concentration. Rundan ambu bichas chamat kati param kurvan muhustumburum dhyana dantarayan sanandana mukham vishmapayam vedasam. When Rupa Goswami says, when the sound of Krishna's flute cracks the eight-layered shell of the universe and starts circulating in the universe, the Kumaras, they're unable to concentrate. Their so-called samadhi is disturbed by this inconceivably beautiful, charming, seductive, mystical sound of Krishna's flute. In Mahaprabhu's pastimes, the devotee Nrisinghananda when he hears that Mahaprabhu is he's going to go towards Vrindavan. The rumors are spreading that Mahaprabhu is going to go to Vrindavan. In his mind, and by this we don't mean regular mind, in his spiritual mind, heart and soul, internally, what do we hear he does? He starts paving this road with flowers, jewels on the sides of the roads. He's creating ponds and beautiful places to stop. This is his meditation. He's using his spiritual intelligence to serve substantially in that plane. This isn't a fantasy. As he conceives, it is. He's producing Chinmoy substance in his spiritual consideration. And he begins in Kulia, Navadvip, and then he finds that it breaks in Kanai Natsala, this one town. Right? I forget, it's like 20 miles outside of Calcutta or something. And so he can't go beyond that. So then he realizes and tells all the devotees, Mahaprabhu won't make it to Vrindavan. So is he mad? Or is he connected inconceivably in a very substantial way in that plane? And the latter is correct. So just little before Radharani, the Dwarka queens, the Mahishigan and Mahishi Gita. There's just as there's the Brahma Gita of Radharani, there's Mahishi Gita of the queens of Dwarka when they're feeling separation from Krishna. And what do they begin with? This Kurari, Vilapasi, Nidra, Nisheshe. They're approaching the Kurari, I think it's translated as an osprey, a particular type of bird that has a pitiful wail cry in the evening. And in the madness of their separation, they're approaching that bird, hearing the bird wailing, and they're saying, oh, you can't sleep now in the absence of your Krishna. Are you like us? You've been somehow abandoned by your Lord, but he's sleeping somewhere we don't know. He won't hear your plaintive cries. So what we're told by the acharyas is their internal condition, when they look outwardly, that's being, imposed and infused on everything in the environment. So when they hear they're hearing, if we approach this from an objective point of view, they're hearing some birds sing, or the call of a particular bird. But because of the inner condition of their heart, their samadhi, what's going on in the heart of the queens of Dwarka, they hear that these birds are crying in separation from Krishna and start speaking to them and trying to console them. Srila Gurudev and Navadvip, and we're fortunate here, we hear the sound of the kokil. We hear in the prayer of Srinivas Acharya in praise of the Goswamis, one of the lines is Kujat Kokilahansa Sarasadana Kire Mayura Kule. He's said, Kujat Kokil means the sweet sound of the kokil, Hansa swans, Mayur, the peacocks. He's describing Vrindavan in a very mystical way. and the Kokil and the Gita Govinda, Sloka loved by Mahaprabhu, by Gurudev, Lalita Lavangalata Parishilana Kamala Malaya Samiri Maru Karabi Kara Karambita Kokila Kujita Kunja Kutire. And this Kokil appears in the writings of the Goswamis. So we are in Navadvip, and Srila Gurudev is here. We hear the sounds of the Kokil. And he's listening, and they're going, and Gurudev said, oh, he said, two males are competing for the affection of a female. So one makes the sound, another makes the sound. They go back and forth, like making sweeter, 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 sweeter. And then he's just thinking about that to himself. Then he thought of this line from the maybe Padyavali of Rupa Goswami, where it says, I forget, but Kurvati Kila Ko Kila something Vishadam Jaimini Iti Jaimini, like that. And what he said is, in this prayer, Rupa Goswami says that Srimati Radharani, she's taking the name of Jaimini Rishi. She's calling on Jaimini Rishi to save her. She hears the sound of the Kokil and starts crying out the name of Jaimini Rishi to save her. Why? And he explained, it is the habit of the people of Vrindavan that if, like now, it's lightning, and so someone doesn't want to be struck by lightning. So as a protective prayer, they're taking the name of Jaimini Rishi so that you won't get struck by lightning. Right? Thunder and lightning, like that. He said, but here, and this is the, what is the Sanskrit word for the opposite meanings. I can't recall it right now, but it's mentioned in the Anti Lila of Charitamritam. The sound of the Kokil is very sweet, and sometimes it's compared to the voice of Krishna, sometimes compared to the voice of Radharani herself. So you think, if this sound is sweet and comparable to the voice of Krishna, then you would think that would bring joy to the heart. But in her, this sort of intense separation, the sweet sound of the Kokil is like thunder and lightning striking her heart. So she's taking the name of Jaimini Rishi. So as Srila Guru said, Dimuhi does not mean abstract meditation. Doesn't mean just withdrawing from one plane. We told recently about Pundarik Vidyaniti, you know, going into an ecstatic state for 6 hours. Mahaprabhu, 6 hours, 9 hours. And what does that mean? In this plane, death-like appearance. But in the other plane, in the upper world, total absorption and engagement. As when Srup Damodar and the devotees, although Mahaprabhu stays in a room that has no windows, but there's 3 doors, but the doors are all bolted, and they have a devotee guard. And without the doors opening, and there are no windows, the Gambhir, sometimes they hear him inside, pathetic wailing, rubbing his face into the walls and the intensity of what he's experiencing. It's very painful for them, yet somehow they can accept this because he's still with them. If it becomes too silent, they begin to worry, which will lead them to get Srup Damodar. They open the doors, and sometimes they cannot find Mahaprabhu. And where is he? Chatak Parbat, taking the sand dune to be Govardhan, or the sea to be Jamuna. And so they go to the Jamuna searching, and with a torch lit party, Sripdhamidhar, they find Mahaprabhu. And Mahaprabhu saying, he has three states, his internal state, half internal, half external, external. And external just means aware of the external world, not external consciousness. And he's coming out of this deep internal state. They're all sitting around, they're chanting. He's in a death-like state of separation and internal absorption. They're chanting the holy name into his ears. And gradually he starts coming out and saying, it was so beautiful where I was. There was Radha and Krishna and the Braja Gopis and their water sport pastimes, and I was making flower garlands, everything. And the sound of their ornaments was the most beautiful sound I've ever heard, beyond what we can imagine. So beautiful, just the sound of their ornaments. And then you all made some noise and brought me here. And as Guru Maharaj said, what is that noise? The Krishna Nam of Srup Damodar and all these exalted devotees. So he's saying that compared to, he's saying, the sound of their ornaments was so sweet and enchanting. And you made this noise and you broke my happy dream and brought me here. Right. So, and then Guru Maharaj gave the total opposite interpretation. He's saying, but we may also consider, such is the power of the holy name, it was given preference over direct participation in Leela. Right. But that's another thing to consider. But why did I say this? There was a reason. What was it? What is normally sweet and then not considered sweet, but... Yes, and then there's a reason. But why I decided to say that. Maybe it will come. But one thing that I thought of in saying that is about the Chatak Parvat. Because there, Srila Saraswati Thakur established the Purushottam Gaudiya Math. And this is where his final pastimes began to manifest. And there was at his side for this last month, 2-3 months, was Srila Bhakti Vichar Jajavar Maharaj, who came to him at an early age, and he would sing for him Sri Rupa Manjari Pada and other songs of the Goswamis, and high songs as well. Saraswati Thakur in those final days would hear some of them. But Guru Maharaj mentioned about Jajavar Maharaj, that at around the age of 18, he got this inspiration to search for a sadhu. Right? And he went to Jagannath Puri. And at that time, Srila Saraswati Thakur was in Jagannath Puri. So Guru Maharaj said, in this way, he said, his accumulation was so great that immediately he connected, not just with the sadhu, with Srila Saraswati Thakur. He got this inspiration within Jagannath Puri, Saraswati Thakur was there, he made the connection. So he came at the age of 18 to the Math, and at the age of 28, he took sannyas. He was the last sannyas disciple of Srila Saraswati Thakur. And prior to his taking sannyas, it was suggested by Srila Saraswati Thakur that he take sannyas. So just saying, joined when he was 18, now he's there 10 years, 28, he's very special devotee, would stay with Guru Maharaj at the Mat every year, and we got to meet with him a few times. Very jolly and affectionate. But when this proposal came from Saraswati Thakur that he should take sannyas, there was some hesitation on his part. As a humble Vaishnav, and he's thinking, you know, some fear came to him. What if I can't maintain? Who can say what the future will bring? And others, godbrothers, well-meaning godbrothers, they were all saying, yes, Prabhu, if you're feeling like that, and they're kind of counseling him not to proceed along those lines. Then he came to Srila Guru Maharaj and expressed these things to Guru Maharaj, and Guru Maharaj, being the wisest of all, he immediately went to Saraswati Thakur and told him, I think his, what was his name? Sarveshwar or Sarvananda or something, Brahmacharya, to, you know, has some fear has arisen in him about proceeding. And Saraswati Thakur called him to him and he said, in this act of taking sannyas in the line of Mahaprabhu, he said, you are approaching the Abhayapad, the fearless domain, the fearless world. It's this world that we're in at present that you should be afraid of. Not that world, not going towards that plane, but this world you should be afraid of, not that. And of course, he agreed. After that adjustment came from Saraswati Thakur. And he would sit next to Guru Maharaj sometimes when Guru Maharaj is speaking. And he knew so many Sanskrit verses. If there was one Guru Maharaj couldn't think of immediately or was searching for, Jajavar Maharaj immediately supplied that. And one of the talks we've published, he was there for that and supplied the sloka. Nahya kasmad guru or jnanam sustiram su pushkalam. From the 11th canto about the plurality of gurus, how that's helpful for the disciple to hear from the different Vaishnavas and guru capacity. But I remember Guru Maharaj is searching for that immediately, Jajavar Maharaj supplying that. And he was teasing Sagar Maharaj and myself once. He called us over and he said, he'd like sit outside with his assistant chanting japa, and you know, you're walking by or something. And he said, as a preacher, you find yourself in many different situations, and people ask you all sometimes very mind-bending questions. Or he said, so what would you say if someone said, and they're quoting, I don't know, the Devi Bhagwat, and they're saying, when Krishna at Govardhan, he's receiving all these offerings, it's told there, all the different people from all the different villages could make offerings and he was accepting them. So some people think some of the offerings were non-vegetarian. He said, what would you say? And we're sitting there. And Sagar Maharaj is just, we're looking at, he's like, who's going to respond to this? But Yajavar Maharaj, he's actually teasing us a little bit. It's like a transcendental joke, and he said, yat karosi yadushnasi, yat jaho. It's the famous sloka in Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says, whatever you do, whatever you offer, whatever you give away, do it as an offering unto me. Hare Krishna. But he liked to come and stay with Guru Maharaj at least a month every year. Just come and stay, visit with Guru Maharaj, and they would have their discussions about Gaudiya Math and slokas and Saraswati Thakur. And Srila Gurudev liked him very much. He loved Srila Gurudev. And he wrote one, like, the Bhakti Rakak Stuti. He wrote like a 10, 11, 12 sloka prayer in praise of Srila Guru Maharaj. To show this was not just mere peer appreciation, but as we found in so many cases, these godbrothers had genuine reverence for Srila Guru Maharaj. Sometimes Srila Gurudev would say that deepened his faith in Guru Maharaj to see, not from his disciple section, but to see how much reverence and appreciation that Guru Maharaj's godbrothers had for him. So much so that they would say, when he speaks, we take it that Prabhupada Saraswati Thakur is speaking. That level. And to say that about your godbrother is extraordinary praise, for sure. Hare Krishna. Jai Srila Bhakti Vichara Yajavara Maharaj Abhibhava Mahamahotavatiti Ki Jai. Anything else? Okay. Hari Harai Namo Krishna Yadavaya Namaha. Hari Harai Namo Krishna Yadavaya Namaha. Yadavaya Madhavaya Kesavaya Namaha. Gopal Govinda Ram Sri Madhusudan Giridhari Gopinath Madana Mohan Sri Chaitanya Nityananda Sri Advaita Chandra Garadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Jai Rupa Sanatan Bhatta Raguna Sri Jiva Gopala Bhatta Dasa Raguna Echai gochai kori charana bandan Jaha hoite vignanash abhista puran Echai gochai dharmui tarodas Tansavada padarenu moda panchagras Tandara charana sevi bhakta sanevas Janame janame more abhilas Echai gochai jabe braje koilo vas Radha Krishna nitya lila kori lo prakash Anande bolo hari bhaja vrindavan Sri Guru Vaishnava pade majai aman Sri Guru Vaishnava Pad Padma Koriyas Harinam Sankirtan Koe Narottamadan Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Nitya Gaur Hari Bo, Hari Bo, Hari Bo, Gaur Hari Bo.
Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahansa Paribhaja Kacharya Sitar Sri Srimad Srila Bhakti Sundar Govinda Dev Goswami Maharaj Ki Jai. Jai Om Vishnu Pad Srila Bhakti Prakashvinar Dev Goswami Maharaj Ki Jai. Bhagavan Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Ki Jai. Jai Saparikar Sri Sri Guru Gauranga Gandharva Govinda Sundar Ju Ki Jai. Sri Giriraj Govardhan Ki Jai. Sri Rupanuga Guru Varga Ki Jai. Nama Charja Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Purnityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasari Gaur Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai. Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Shyamakunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai. Navadeep Dham Ki Jai. Sri Chaitanya Saraswat Mat Ki Jai. Sri Gupta Govardhan Ki Jai. Ganga Devi Tuna Devi Bhakti Devi Tulsi Devi Ki Jai. Srila Bhakti Bhitar, Yajabhar Maharaj, Yajabhar Maharaj, Avirbhav Mahamahotavatiti Ki Jai. Om Vishnupad Vishvavarenya Srila Esi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai. Sri Chaitanya Saraswat Madhacharya Vrinda Ki Jai. Jai Srila Bhakti Bhimalavadut Maharaj Ki Jai. Seva Vrinda Ki Jai. Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Nitai Go Premanande.